Good morning. Welcome to United. Woo, you can do better than that. Come on, good morning. Give me something this morning. We just saw something cool. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. So my name is Charles Fisher. I'm part of the team here at United, and it's a privilege and a pleasure to be able to come to you and just share some encouragement is my hope today. And so I wanted to tell you just a little quick about myself is I served in youth ministry and lead ministry for several years. And currently over the last 5.5 years, I've found myself as a director at a Christian daycare. And so I work with kids a lot. And so before I really dive into like teaching, I feel like I need to read to you kind of like storybook style what I would do with my kids at the daycare. And so being the director, not in their classrooms all the time, but I get to pop in and like do story time and then leave and then not have to worry about the craziness all the day, which is kind of fun. And so I love to just share one of my favorite stories with you that I share with them. Is that okay? Can I do that? All right. So I'll get down here, a little story time moment here, you know? All right. How many of you know Pete the Cat? You know Pete the Cat? Yeah? Yeah, Pete the Cat. Now I picture Pete the Cat as like a Louis Armstrong, like cool cat. Like he's got that gravelly voice. And so I do a little bit of voices, but I'm not that great. So I'm just going to do what I can. And you got to bear with me. And just, if it's awkward, just laugh at me awkwardly and I'll just know it'll be okay. All right. So Pete the Cat and his magic sunglasses is the story I want to tell you this morning. And I've got some pictures up there. If you can't see, looks like I tell the kids, I'll hold it up. Everybody gets a chance to see and put it up on the screen as well. So one day, Pete the Cat did not feel very happy. He never, ever, ever had been grumpy before. Pete the Cat had the blue cat blues. Everybody say, aw. Yeah. Then, as if things could not get bad enough, along came Grumpy Toad. And Grumpy Toad was never happy. He always wore a frown. Everybody say, what? But Grumpy Toad was not grumpy today. He said, these cool blue magic sunglasses make the blues go away. See? Yeah. They help you see things in a whole new way. That's my Grumpy Toad. Pete put on the cool blue magic sunglasses and he looked all around. Right on. The birds are singing. The sky is bright. The sun is shining and I'm feeling all right. All right? Then Pete the Cat comes along to a squirrel, and the squirrels are crazy, and the squirrel's not having a good day either. And he says, I'm so mad. Nothing is going my way. I only found one acorn today. He's freaking out. So Pete the Cat says, try on these cool blue magic sunglasses. They'll help you see things in a whole new way. And so the squirrel does, and guess what happens? He sees things in a whole new way. Everybody say, huh? Yeah. All right. So he says, awesome, the birds are singing, the sky is bright, the sun is shining, and I'm feeling all right. And I'm a squirrel, so I'm a little crazy. I added that little part in there, sorry. He finds a turtle, and the turtle's on his shell upside down. Everybody say, oh no. This turtle's upside down. He says, I'm so frustrated. Nothing is going my way today. I'm all upside down today. So Pete the Cat says, try on these cool blue magic sunglasses. You'll see things in a whole new way. So that all happens. And the turtle says, far out. The birds are... Okay, you know the rest. The birds are singing. The sky is bright. The sun is shining. I'm feeling all right. He comes along a grumpy alligator. And the alligator says, I'm so sad. Nothing is going my way. No one wants to play with me today. And everybody says, it's because those teeth. And so Pete tells him to try on these cool blue magic sunglasses. And of course, the alligator tries on the cool blue magic sunglasses. And the alligator says, rockin'. The birds are singing. The sky is bright. The sun is shining. And I'm feeling all right. Everybody say, I'm feeling all right. So then Pete the Cat is skating along and he breaks his magic sunglasses. Everybody give me the best, oh no. Oh. The cool blue magic sunglasses, they go crack and he's lost his cool blue magic sunglasses. And he doesn't know what he's gonna do. And a wise old owl looks at Pete the Cat and he says, Pete, you don't need magic sunglasses to see things in a new way. Just remember to look for the good in each and every day. And that's how many licks it takes to get to the Tootsie Roll center of a Tootsie Pop. Oh wait, sorry, that's another thing. Look for the good in each and every day. So he looks around, he says, too cool, the birds are singing, the sky is bright, the sun is shining, and we're feeling all right. the end. There you go. So that's Pete the Cat and his magic sunglasses. But I bet you can relate that sometimes things aren't going your way. I bet you can relate that sometimes you feel upside down. Sometimes you feel like the world is against you. Sometimes you feel like you're trying to get things together and you only get a little bit of what the big picture needs to be. You only get a little bit together, like that squirrel looking for food, only finds one nut and goes crazy, like a turtle upside down, feeling like nothing's going his way, like an alligator wanting to hang out with people and nobody wants to hang out with you. We relate. And Pete the Cat says, I want to teach you a way to look at things in a whole new way. And it's not just some magic fix. I'm not going to stand here and say, there's a magic fix. All you need to do is throw on these sunglasses and you're going to see things in a whole new way and your life is going to be peaches and cream from this one out, because that's not the case. The case is that if we refocus and if we rein our focus in, no matter what stuff is going around us, no matter what bad is coming, if the world is against us, no matter how the day is going, no matter what deadlines you've got at work, no matter if you're even looking for a job and can't find a job, no matter what your financial strain is, all those things that stress you out, if you refocus and you don't focus on those and you can focus somewhere else and get your focus on something else, your life could change in a really dramatic way. And it would be pretty far out. So I want to jump in to a story we find in the Bible. And we're in this series called One Hit Wonders, and we find this song in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 31, and we have David writing this as a song to sing. So Psalm 31, and what we have is David in the midst of turmoil, okay? In the midst of turmoil, he writes this psalm. And I'd encourage you to read these, both of these, at some point. So Psalm 31, if you've got a pen or your phone out, just jot that down. Psalm 31, I want you to at some point read through this. We're going to read through it together. But then the story and the backdrop behind it is in 2 Samuel 14 plus. You can just read several chapters and you'll see the story that I'm going to set up for you today. But before I read Psalm 31, I want to tell you the baseline. And the baseline is David is king. This guy, David, is king. God has chosen him to be king. He is the king. He's got a lot of kids. He's had some things go wrong in his life. And one of his kids is the most handsomest man in all the world. It says it right in there. Psalm 14, you look through there, it says, Absalom, his son, is the most handsome man. Now, I picture like a Fabio, you know, with the long hair, or a Gaston from like Beauty and the Beast, who's like so handsome and rugged. And everybody's like, oh, you know, like, it's just, that's who he is, right? And so it says in there that even when he would cut his hair, he would weigh it to just show how well his hair grew in. Who does that? Like, this is the kind of guy he is. He's very vain. He knows he's good looking. And there's some issues here. So David and his son have some issues. They go back and forth. There's some family drama where it ends up healing up and David forgives. But in the midst of even more drama between these two, Absalom starts a rebellion against David, the king and his son. And a rebellion is happening. Okay? So that's where I want to leave that part of the story. And then I want to pause and read the whole psalm, which is a little long. I'll try to break it up as best I can. But I just want you to hear David's words. And not just hear his words, but hear his tone. Hear his emotions. And I want you to just put yourself in his shoes. David the king and his son is against him. His own son, leading a rebellion against him. And he writes these words. In you, Lord, I have taken my refuge. Let me never be put to shame. Deliver me into your righteousness. Turn your ear to me. Come quickly to my rescue. Be my rock of refuge, my strong fortress to save me. Since you are my rock and my fortress, for the sake of your name, lead me and guide me. Keep me free from the trap that is set for me. You are my refuge. Have you ever felt that way, maybe at work or in your house? Or with friends, whatever you say is going to be turned against you and made into a trap, and you're going to be just pulled into some kind of trap of things that you didn't say or you didn't mean. David's got that going on. Into your hands I commit my spirit. Deliver me, Lord, my faithful God. I hate those who cling to worthless idols. As for me, I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and I will rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction. You knew the anguish of my soul. You have not given me into the hands of my enemy. But I have been set, my feet have been set in a spacious place. Be merciful to me, Lord, for I'm in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and my body with grief. My life is consumed with anguish, and my years are by groaning. My strength fails because of my affliction, and my bones grow weak. Have you ever had grief like that? Where just your bones feel weak, your very body feels like it's shutting down. Maybe you relate with no sleep for days. And your eyes start to see things that aren't even there anymore. And you start to look and you just start to fail. Your body is letting you down, constantly letting you down. And David is in that moment. He says, because of all my enemies, I am the utter contempt of my neighbors. I'm an object of dread to my closest of friends. Those who see me on the street, they flee from me. I'm forgotten as though I were dead. I've become like broken pottery. For I hear many whispering, terror on every side, terror on every side. And they conspire against me and they plot to take my own life. But I trust in you, Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from the hands of my enemies, from those who pursue me. Let your face shine on your servant. Save me in your unfailing love. Have you called that out to God at some point? God, just look at me. Do you see what's going on in my life? Look at me. And he's David calling that out. Let me not be put to shame, my Lord, for I have cried out to you. But let the wicked be put to shame and be silenced in the realm of the dead. Let their lying lips be silenced for their pride and contempt. They speak arrogantly against the righteous. You see some of that anger coming up. Because sometimes when the world feels against you, it's because somebody's doing something to you, right? And that anger could start to well up. And you see it a little bit, a little glimpse of that anger. Let their lying lips be silenced. He says, how abundant are the good things that you have stored up for those who fear you, that you bestow in the sight of all of those who take refuge in you. In the shelter of your presence, you hide them from all human intrigues. You keep them safe in your dwelling from accusing tongues. Praise be to the Lord, for he showed me the wonders of his love. When I was a city under siege, in my alarm, I said, I'm cut off from your sight, yet you heard my cry for mercy. When I called for your help, you heard me. Love the Lord, all his faithful people. The Lord preserves those who are true to him, but the proud he pays back in full. Be strong and take heart, all you who hope in the Lord. David, the king, ruler in charge of everything, anointed by God, told he was it. He was the guy in charge, his own son against him. Rising up against him. Let me tell you a little bit more about how this all unfolds, because this whole story is crazy. This whole story of Absalom is just insane. You have this handsome man who could do anything and have anything he wanted, and he walks around, and what he starts to do is he starts to build a resistance against his father, very slowly. He doesn't wake up one morning and say, hey David, I'm against you. This is not a time routine that's gone bad. This is real life. An adult man, he says to himself that he's gonna start following through with some things. And there's a whole situation in the family where he seeks revenge when revenge shouldn't have been sought out. And he flees and he runs away. And when he comes back, David greets him with a kiss in front of everyone, saying, I have forgiven this man. A kiss by the king in front of everyone would have been a reinstatement into the family. This is my son again. Yes, he did something, but this is my son. And then he continues down a path of rebellion. Absalom starts to build up a resistance against the king by going to the gate. And this is a genius plot, by the way. He goes to the gate and he waits for people that are coming to the king with their problems and issues. And as people come, he stops them and he flips his hair, you know. He says, hey, listen, I'll listen to your troubles. And he says, tell me what's going on. So these people pour their hearts out to Absalom, son of the king. And he listens and he says, you know, you shouldn't bother the king with this because the king doesn't really care about you. He doesn't really want to help you, just so you know. Now, if I were king, if I were in charge, let me tell you what I would do. If I were in charge, I'd let you come and tell me these problems and I would fix them and sort them because I would care deeply for you. But alas, I'm not the king. Yeah, everybody say, oh, I'm not the king. But you could take it to the king. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, he's not going to care for it. And the people turn around and they leave. They say, well, I'm not going to take it to the king if he's not going to listen to me, if he's not going to care. And he continues to do this, building a resistance and building a resistance and building the resistance. You ever feel the world against you? David felt the world against him. He's the king and his own son standing by the gate telling everybody, don't listen, the king doesn't care about you. And everybody starts believing it. Because when you're in that time, it's really easy to believe anything that's told to you. When you're in that darkness and the world's against you and somebody's coming to this guy with troubles and that, all they have to do is say, you know what? They don't care about you. And you immediately believe it. My own king doesn't care about you. Absalom continues to build this rebellion. And eventually he goes to his dad and he says, hey, dad, I want to go to this city over here and I just want to check in on things. And David's like, yeah, sure, go over there. That'd be great. He goes over to that city and you know what he does? He walks through the gates and says, hey, guess what? I'm now in charge. Which is not true. That's not what you were sent there for. But he says, I'm now in charge. Bring your troubles to me. I want to talk to you. I want to help you. I'm for the people. I'm all about you. And he starts telling them this and he starts building the resistance against David. And David starts to feel it because people start going back to David and telling him, hey, do you know that Absalom's over here saying all this? And David's immediate response is to run away and hide, which brings up whole another level of controversy. If the king is going to hide, all of this must be true. But in you know, there's at some way a reality where David is like, this is my son. I just have to get away from this for a minute. But to the people that communicates, this is the end. Everything that Absalom has said is true. So everyone believes everything because now they feel like it's been affirmed. David's leaving and hiding and he goes into hiding and that's the end. Then it gets up and builds up to the battle scene. You know, the epic battle scene that you watch any epic movie, you watch waiting for the battle scene to unfold and it starts to build up and the tension builds up and you know it's gonna be an awesome battle. There's gonna be heads flying, blood everywhere, blood, blood. And you're like, yeah, Braveheart. Like, you know it's coming and it's coming and it's coming. And when that moment comes, Absalom gets on a donkey and runs away. Like, wait, what? He gets on a donkey, like, this is good. I'm going, don't take me away, take me away, my noble steed. He runs off on a donkey into the woods. His long hair, that when he cut his hair, he would weigh it because it was so majestic and beautiful. It grew in so thick. And he runs through the woods, and his hair gets stuck in a tree. And it yanks him off the donkey, and the donkey's like, see ya, bye, Felicia. And donkey's gone into the woods, and Absalom's hanging by his hair in a tree. And everybody comes up, and they're like, hey. There's an Absalom in the tree. This is the guy leading the rebellion. And one guy's like, let's kill him. And the other guy's like, wait a minute, this is the king's son. This is the king's son. And so they have a little bit of a dialogue. And you know, a few minutes later, three javelins are thrown into the guy's heart. I guess the it's his son argument lost. And they went overkill. They're like, let's go three javelins into the heart. Everyone shoot him with arrows. We'll throw him in the ditch. We'll cover him with rocks. Then we can go home. It'd be great. So that's what happens. They kill Absalom in the tree, bury his body in the woods with the stones over it. The king's son, and doesn't even get a nice burial. He's thrown into a ditch and rocks thrown over him. And then they go to tell David. They send messengers to David, and he's waiting, anxiously waiting for the news. What's going to happen? What is happening? And he gets the news, and people come, and he sees them in the distance, and he's excited because something good has got to have happened. And he sees them coming, and what happens? They say, hey, guess what? The rebellion is over. And the king's like, well, that's great, but what about my son? And they're like, did you miss it? The rebellion's over. We can celebrate and rejoice now. And the king's like, yes, but what about my son? And they're like, I think you missed the point, David. The rebellion's over. Bring out the feast. Let's have a party. And he says, what about my son? Oh, he's gone. And David rips his clothes and mourns. You see, even winning doesn't always feel like winning. And so when you're looking for the victory and you're trying to figure out what's going on in your own life and you get to the point of winning or you get to the point of the end, sometimes winning doesn't even feel like winning, does it? Because you get to the end and this is a father who just lost his son to win against a rebellion. That's a lose-lose scenario. But he won. And sometimes it doesn't always feel like winning. When we read through this psalm, and you can hear David's cry, can't you? Now knowing his story, knowing what's going on, you can hear his cry. He calls out to God and said, God, I trust in you, but this is awful. He says, God, I trust in you, but my enemies are vast. They're all over the place. This is horrible. God, I trust you and I love you, but this is bad. God, I trust you, but what about my son? God, I trust you, but what about these people lying about me? God, I trust you, but the world's against me. You can hear it, can't you? In that psalm when he says, I trust in God, but all these people are against me. You can hear his ups and downs. And you can learn from somebody who in the midst of all of that turmoil, he turns to God and he says, I do trust in you. I do trust in your strength. That you've got this figured out. That I'm not sure how, but you've got it. God, you've got it. And there's two main things that I want us to pull and remember. When you're in that time and all that turmoil is going on, if you want to refocus and see things in a whole new way, there's two things. First, trust God in his strength. And at first, this does sound like just magic sunglasses. If you've never stepped foot in a church before and you hear somebody say, trust in God, you're like, oh yeah, that sounds like easy, just okay, that's all I gotta do. Put these sunglasses on and forget the troubles of the world. That's not the point, because the troubles are still there. David's son is still gone, but he trusts in God. And you don't have to have it all figured out to get there, to start putting trust in there and putting hope in him. Man, I know I don't. I don't have it all figured out. David didn't have it all figured out. There's no way that David was like, this is how it's gonna end and I'm okay with that. No, this is a struggle of ups and downs, of emotional turmoil, of the world against me. And I still, if I'm gonna survive this, if I'm going to live through it to see tomorrow, I need to refocus and see things in a whole new way. And in order to do that, we trust God in his strength. David even finishes the psalm off saying, be strong, take courage, all those who fear in the Lord. And that second thing is to ask God for mercy. And I mean like beg for it, plead with God for it. Ask God for his mercy. That's what we see David doing in the midst of the turmoil, in the midst of the dominoes. You know, you hit one domino and they all in the midst of that. He calls out to God and he says, God, I need you to be my fortress. I need you to save me because I can't do this. Call out to God for mercy. And maybe you have felt at some level that you've done that and then you've not seen him show up. Well, I'm gonna encourage you to refocus, because even David knew that winning doesn't always feel like winning. So the way God shows up might not always feel like he showed up right away, but refocus and keep your eyes on him. Because he has strength that's beyond measure. And David shows us that. In that midst of turmoil, he shows us that. He even says, in the midst of all that bad, right? He's got all that bad. David the king, his son rising up against him. In the midst of all that, all the people in the kingdom turning on him. In the midst of all that bad, what does David say? He says, how abundant are the good things that you store for those who fear you. You'll never see those good things if all you're ever looking at is the bad things. You'll never see them. David knew that. How do I make this work? I gotta focus. I once heard a speaker tell a story about his grandmother, and he said that she was always watching this show, Matlock. You know, have you heard Matlock, right? 80s into the 90s. White guy TV drama, right? So this guy here, every episode wins his court cases. And I heard this speaker go to his grandmother. He said, I went to my grandmother. I was like, why are you always watching Matlock? You know, in the end, he's going to win. He's going to stand up there against the trial. And the end of the episode is going to be like, Matlock's right. We arrest the guy. He's going out. Everything's done. Matlock wins the day. And he's like, why do you watch Matlock? And she looks at him and says, son, I don't watch Matlock to see if he's going to win. I watch Matlock to see how is he gonna do it this time. He said, that's why I watch Matlock. I don't know how he's gonna do it, but I know he's going to. And it's the same with our relationship with God. At some level, when we refocus and we readjust our focus and we're focused on him and we're trusting in him, we know that we come out of this okay. We know that ultimately we're okay. We know that there will be a win, even if it doesn't always feel like a win. We know there'll be a win, and we know there's victory. We know it, and we just got to tune in because we got to figure out how God's going to do it this time. in the midst of that turmoil, when the bad is here and the bad is here and the bad is here. And sometimes it's just the turmoil of a bad day, but sometimes it's the turmoil of your life, and it spans years and years and years of turmoil. When you're looking at that, and you're looking at a financial ruin, you're looking at a job change, you're looking at relationship changes, you're looking at all these things that just appear as bad, when you are in the midst of all that, if you can refocus the way David did, you're gonna see the good. And you're gonna see things in a whole new way. And you don't need a magic sunglasses fix, because what you need is to readjust your focus so that you can see that there's good in each and every day. Somewhere there's good. It might be hard to see it, but when you're focused on him and his trust, and you're putting your trust and hope in him, you'll see it. We see it in the life of Jesus. In the life of Jesus, Jesus is sent to this earth to repair the relationship between us and God. And what was the win? Jesus dying on the cross. That doesn't feel like a win. That's when our sins are forgiven. That doesn't feel like a win. And then he's raised from the dead to prove that he is who he said he was. And we see that win all over again. And we see it in a new light. And then we celebrate it as a church every week. And we're going to do that here in a few minutes. We're going to get ready in a few minutes to have communion together. And everything points to this focus point. This moment of Jesus dying for our sins so that we could have a relationship with him in the midst of our turmoil. Remember that. That God has more strength and power than we ever could understand. We don't have to have it all figured out to get there, but we can refocus and narrow in on that. And if we do that, we'll start seeing the good in each and every day. When we do that, we see moments like this that happen. A refocused life all the way on him. A life focused saying, hey, God, you've got this. I'm not sure how you're gonna do it, but I know you're gonna do it. And that's where we stand. So I'm gonna ask the ushers to go ahead and pass those plates of communion. And I encourage you to just take a moment when that comes by. It's two cups stacked on top of each other, a little bit of juice, a little bit of cracker. And it's a symbol of Jesus dying for us. It's a symbol of that last supper that he had with his disciples where he says, do this in remembrance of me. It's a symbol that we can lock onto and adjust our focus to of God's great strength and great love and mercy. And so refocus today so that all your energy is on that and not focused on all the bad.